I don't really know the speaker, and I just met him for the first time, actually, both the speakers. So, all I can tell you...
I'm Bob. I'm an addict. I'm addicted to all drugs, including alcohol. My topic is, what can I do? And I was trying to think of, you know, how to... what context to use that in. Today I can do anything I want to do except for drugs and alcohol. The way it was before, that's all I could do. And sometimes I couldn't even do that if I didn't have the means to do it by. I guess I'll just tell my story and try to... I'll run through my life a little bit, and my experience, strength, and hope. I have to start with the day I was born, because I was born with birth defects. I had 16 plastic surgeries starting at 6 weeks old. I grew up in children's hospitals in Philadelphia, Chicago, New Jersey, Virginia, all over Utah. But I was born downwind of a nuclear testing site. And there was 10,000 people trying to sue the government. And me and my younger sister were born with birth defects. So I had a rough childhood. And my dad worked for the government. We moved from Utah to Chicago to Philadelphia to D.C. Every time I got settled into a place, it was time to move. When I was 10 years old, my mom committed suicide in a bar. She shot herself in the head. Today I'm coming to accept that. But my dad worked out of town all week long, so I ran the streets on my bicycle, you know. I got in a lot of trouble. I was an addict back then because I got high on adrenaline. I used to jump my bicycle over tires or whatever, you know, go over a big dirt hill and go flying through the air because it'd give me a rush. So I was an addict since the day I was born. I got up into, I guess, about 14. I drank, stole bottles of Boone's Farm from the grocery store. Wrapped them up in a newspaper and walked out with them. And I remember the first time I got drunk and I swore I'd never do it again. And that was the first lie in a long series of lies to myself. And I started smoking pot. Inhaled Bactine, spraying Bactine into a cap. Whatever would get me high. Through my high school years, well, at that point, I was highly successful. I was an all-star baseball player. Played baseball from 6 years old to 18 years old. I was a gymnast. I was a professional auto mechanic at 14 years old. A mobile gas station. I went to school. Had all kinds of things going for me. Then I got into drugs and alcohol, and I mixed that with fast cars. And that was a cool thing to do. And we'd have a field party every night. The first time I came here, I thought I was back at the field party. I was so uncomfortable, I had to leave. Just the atmosphere, the campfire, you know, people sitting around. I couldn't deal with it. I drove out of here, and that night I stopped at the Jerome meeting. I stayed at that meeting, and then I told myself, I have to come back here, because I got to learn how to go to a party clean and sober. And so I came back here. But in high school, it was field parties every night. In the D.C. area, there was every drug you could possibly want. Smoked PCP a lot, cocaine, There wasn't a whole lot of heroin. There was MDA, Quaaludes, you name it. I tried everything, just, you know, experimenting or whatever, but eventually my drug of choice was cocaine and alcohol. And, let's see. In high school, it started out as fun, and a few of my friends were dying in car accidents. I lost four or five at once riding in the back of a pickup truck, and they flipped that. And my car accident started happening. Smoking PCP, I wrecked a real nice Camaro around a tree, and a big 4x4 came through my windshield and missed me by this much. And I rolled a duster, rolled it about five times. They had to cut me out of that car. Didn't have a scratch on me. It took me to the hospital, then to the jail. Been in 15 car accidents altogether. Motorcycles, cars, I jackknifed an 18-wheeler. Broke my neck, my back, my foot, five ribs, one arm, two fingers. I could go on and on, but I guess it progressed from there. And I hooked up with a guy that was a big coke dealer, and all of a sudden I had unlimited cocaine if I fixed his Corvette. And after 3 weeks I was almost dead. And I walked out of there, and I walked out of there looking like a skeleton. And I went back to alcohol. I thought I'd quit drugs. And then the alcoholism progressed. People would come up, show up with cocaine, and if I was drinking, then it'd be doing cocaine or whatever, you know. But it was a real hell. Eventually, I ended up here in Johnstown because I ran out of Maryland, got in some trouble, and I ran out of Virginia, got in some trouble. And I ran to I ran out of California to Virginia to Maryland to Pennsylvania. That was my solution to the problem, was to run away from it. And came to Pennsylvania with nothing. And I thought I was in heaven because the beer was so cheap in these bars. And found a job, and I worked. I always worked the job, but got to a point where I couldn't work, you know. And lost everything little by little. Lost my license, you know, all my cars were wrecked. I was walking or riding a 10-speed if I didn't wreck the 10-speed. And racked up a whole pile of drunken Publix. I got busted for cocaine twice. Spent 30 days in jail. I was in a small town and they left me in jail and forgot I was in there. That goes on and on, but when I hit my rock bottom, I was vomiting blood, I was dizzy, I was on my hands and knees, living in the projects. Before that, I lived in the woods. I lived in the woods in all those Virginia, Maryland, and Pennsylvania. And I didn't think I had a problem. I'm living in the woods just thinking, what can I do, you know? How can I get my next high? And when I started vomiting blood, I knew it was about the end of the line. And it wasn't any fun anymore. I just knew on the inside that I was dying, you know. This thing didn't kill me from the outside in. It was killing me from the inside out. And doctor said I didn't have much longer to live. And I went back out with more drugs and alcohol. That's all I knew how to do. Then I came in again. same condition. And my sister, God bless her, my younger sister, one night she asked me, she said, I'd really like to see you get some treatment. And that thought never occurred to me. And I was sitting there all depressed, I was crying, life stopped, and she checked into rehabs and detoxes, and I had a medical card, and she found out that would pay for everything. All I had to do was walk my ass in there. So I finished the car I was working on, I got paid, and I went out one last day before I checked myself in. And I smoked a bag of weed, I drank a couple pitchers of beer, I shot pool, took a case of beer to my friend's house, drank that, brought a couple six-packs home, drank that, and I wasn't even buzzed. They said, well, I guess it's time, and about midnight, I walked myself into the hospital in Johnstown. And I was a mess. I was an empty shell of a person. I was shaking like a leaf, until I drank. I was having DTs. I was having nightmares of snakes this big around. And everywhere I went, there'd be snakes, and dogs biting me, and waking up in a pool of sweat, cold sweat. If I smoked crack, I'd have to drink beer because I'd be so wired and nervous from that. But anyway, I went through hell, If hell's worse than that, then I definitely don't want to go there. But I checked myself in. I sat in that detox. Now it's a meeting room now, and every time I go into that room, I think of those 3 days I sat there. Puking and shaking and sweating, and with the IVs in me and all that. And I was there 3 days, then I went to a 28-day rehab in Crescent. Then I started learning that it's a disease. I didn't know the first thing about recovery. I tried every way to moderate or quit or whatever, and nothing ever worked. And I know what relapse is like because I quit for 2 months once, and on New Year's Eve I went out and I was right back where I started, only worse. It is true that the disease progresses even when you're not using. But I was in the rehab for 28 days, and I started feeling hope in about the third week. The second week, they had to rush me to the hospital because I went into shock. All my pain all of a sudden came back. I was hit with physical pain, emotional pain. My disease was craving something, And I went into shock, and they had to take me in an ambulance from the rehab to the hospital. And I asked for non-narcotic painkillers, and they hooked me up, and they let me go. And I walked out the front door of that hospital, and I could see bars down here, the neon lights. And there was a telephone over here. And I was kind of torn there. But I was starting to see some hope, And I went to the phone, and I told him to come get me and bring me back to the rehab. I finished my other 14 days. They diagnosed me as self-medicating, but I think I'm just an addict like everyone else. I had to medicate because all the consequences that I was medicating, which started from the addiction. But I started really getting into recovery, I got out of there. They dropped me off right at a meeting at 8 o'clock at that same hospital. And a guy came up to me, he says, you need some money? And I said, yeah, I am kind of broke. And a guy lent me $10. He still goes to those meetings. And I started thinking, these people are all right, my other friends took from me. These people were helping me. They cared. They were giving to me. And I had some rough days in early recovery. I work on cars, and I found out it's a big trigger when people take advantage of me. When I help somebody and save them $50 or $100 and they can't pay me $20, I'm sitting there with no food or nothing. And that triggered off anger, which triggered off cravings. And I get myself to a meeting. I went through New Visions. I had a counselor to talk to 3 times a week. And he taught me about drawing boundaries, about recognizing triggers, about change, basically. And I had a lot of triggers. I had a real good day. I was down the music store and I won $1,000 guitar just because I put my name in a box. And I was so happy I wanted to go celebrate. So I went to a meeting. I had a problem with boredom in Johnstown. I couldn't find anything to do. There was nothing but bars around, you know. So I worked on myself. I worked on cars. I tried to stay in the positive. I have a theory about positive and negative. My higher power is Jesus Christ. And I believe there's another power greater than me that I call Satan. And Satan dragged me around by a rope or whatever for a lot of years. And as far as spirituality, I start with spiritual concepts or spiritual principles. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. To me, those are positive. What I used to be was dishonest, closed-minded, and unwilling. Those are negative spiritual principles. I use spiritual principles as building blocks for spiritual progress. And I came to believe when I saw miracles happening in my life. The biggest miracle was the freedom from the bondage, the obsession of addiction. And after a couple months, I was feeling like a new person. You know, I walked into that detox to save my life. And that was the only reason. I had no idea I was going to find a whole new life. All new friends, people that care about me. I was amazed, you know. Anything I do it to extremes. And I just put a lot of effort into my recovery. I came out of the rehab, I had a eviction notice on my door, I had 2 fines to pay. I had a lot of, those were the first things that I did. I sold a guitar and paid my fines. You know, but then I won a guitar worth 3 times as much. Every time I took care of something or I paid somebody back, somehow money came back to me. I was short on my rent 1 month, and a lady stopped by with a check. I was $100 short. She stopped by with a check for $100. She said God told her to make her yearly donation to me. I had a bad day once where everything hit me at once. My chronic pain, my anger. I went to a meeting. People were arguing in the meeting. I mean, nothing went right that day. I think I had 2 months or 3 months. I was getting ready to head down to the bar, and my dog took my car keys off my front porch. I looked all through the house. I thought I was losing my mind. I looked in my, I had a van. I looked in the van. Nowhere. Now, the only explanation is the dog took him. So I started looking through the yard, and I found him in the middle of the backyard at 2 a.m., right when the bars closed. There's been other things, too, that are, you know, beyond coincidence. And I see my higher power working in my life. You know, I feel him working in my life. Just little things, you know. A guy in the meeting asked me to go out to Twin Lakes and talk to the adolescent group. So I went out there, and I don't know, I think I got more out of doing that than those kids got out of it. They wrote me thank you cards, and, you know, it was just awesome, you know, to give back what was given to me. In 3 days, I'll have 7 years clean and sober, and I want to keep growing. You know, every day, more is revealed. Every day is a new adventure, you know. Some days I go a little backwards, some days I go forward, but another thing I was thinking is when I first started with my first drug, which was alcohol, it made me get over my shyness, and I felt confident, and I thought, yeah, this is the ticket. And in recovery, once I got rid of all the chemicals, I was all the way back there. And I was in a meeting, and I was shy. I didn't have my drugs or my alcohol. So I had to overcome that without drugs and alcohol. I had to go all the way back to that point and work on that character defect. And I started, you know, by talking in meetings. Because I could never talk right. You know, the roof of my mouth is stainless steel, plastic, porcelain. And, that was an issue for me. But I started talking at meetings a little bit. And then I went out and talked to those kids. And this right here is probably the biggest group I've ever talked to. And the first time I've ever talked. You know, I've never done a speaker meeting except to a group of 8 or 10 kids. I dropped out of college because they wanted me to get up in front of the class and give a speech. So what did I do? I ran. Recovery for me is all about facing things instead of running from them, working through them and getting them over with. I heard Bob there once at a meeting, and he said, you can't go around the problem, you can't go under it, over it, you got to work through it, you know. And that's how it is, you know. Today I pretty much have a good life today. I had a lot of consequences to clean up, to dig myself out of that hole. And Another thing I learned, they taught me that stress is the number one cause of relapse. I tried to get all the stress out of my life. And I got most of it out. You know, the only thing I have to do today is I have to go to a meeting or keep spiritually healthy, and I have to work. And I work for myself. You know? So, I have a good life today. I got my license back, I got cars now, I'm doing the things I like to do. I'm building classic cars. I work on guitars, I play guitar. I couldn't even play my guitar when I was in early recovery because I didn't have those chemicals in me. I learned how to play it clean and sober. And now I remember what I'm playing, and I learned. Before, I didn't remember what I played, you know. Sounded real good when I was high, but when I listened to some of those old tapes, they sucked, you know. And, I guess it just sounded good in my mind, but, I don't know, I've met a lot of great people in the program. I have a circle of friends, you know. We go out and do stuff, and you know, if I'm low on money, I have a couple friends that'll lend me money because they know I'll pay them back. The biggest reward for me is how I feel inside, though. my serenity, my peace of mind. If I have, like in early recovery, I had some money, and I could have bought a car, or I could have paid somebody back. And I got more satisfaction out of paying the people back, and getting my clear conscience, my peace of mind, you know, my guilt, working on my guilt, because those little thoughts would come up, oh, I owe this guy, or I owe my sister, or, you know, and I cleaned up all that mess, and I started feeling better about myself. I don't know why I'm here today. The odds of me being here after what I've been through, like a million to one. Because I didn't care if I lived or died. You know, I tried to kill myself a few times. Because I was in a living hell. I thought I was put on this earth to be tortured repeatedly. There's always some disaster happening to me, you know. Since I've been in recovery almost 7 years, the only bad things that happened to me was my dogs got hit by a car. And that was something out of my control. And I think back in my using days, I got run over twice. You know? I woke up in the hospital with my jeans all spliced lengthwise so they could see how many bones I broke this time. You know? And it's amazing that I'm in perfect health. I don't have any diseases. I mean, I ache every time it rains, but that's a small price to pay. There's just a few basic rules that I go by. You know, stay in the positive. When I look at the 12 rewards, you know, hope instead of desperation. They're all opposites. I used to have desperation, now I have hope. Respect instead of contempt. I used to have contempt, now I have respect. On the positive side of that line, things go up and get better. And on the negative side of that line, things go down and get worse. And I went all the way down. I stayed at that party for 27 years. I was the only survivor of my friends that I grew up with. I learned a lot of things about life in recovery. Being honest, you know, I get jobs, people trust me. I have master keys to thousands of mobile homes for Conseco Finance. If I was a thief, I could go make a killing. But they know I'm honest. People give me money to fix their cars because they know I'm honest. You know, they know I'm going to give them a receipt and a change. And I get more business that way. I get better jobs that way. I'm going up, you know. If I was stealing, you know, I get a reputation as a thief. Nobody want to be around me. But, my addiction, the most harm I did was to myself. And I lied to myself quite a bit, and I didn't even know I was lying. You know, I didn't think I had a problem. I'd swear up and down. I didn't have a problem. It was the cops that did it. It was that dude or this dude. It was me, you know. When I came to accept responsibility, it was a disease as the root cause of the whole thing. When I get angry at somebody today, I look at them and I see them as a sick person. And I turn all my anger at the disease. I've met a few people that are just plain ignorant. And but most of the people, you know, they're sick. Ooh. All my anger goes towards a disease that makes me hate it even more, that makes me stay away from it even more. Yeah, when I got rid of the chemicals, I didn't have any problems. So that tells me that was causing all the problems. I'd run from a problem, get high, make more problems, and that mountain of problems just grew and grew up to the unmanageable point. And then I'd either leave the state or move to another town. I don't know. But I look at it like I got this disease locked in the closet, you know. I starved it and put it in a closet. And if I just turn that doorknob, it's going to bust out of there and kick my ass. And it's a monster, you know. It beat the hell out of me. Today I don't even want to look at any, you know. When I got out of the rehab, I took the posters off my walls. Anything that had drugs or alcohol was gone. I stayed away from people, places, things. A couple days, I really had to fight the bullet to stay clean and sober. But I made it through those days. And then the next day was always better. I don't know what else to say except, what can I do? Today I can do what I want to do. I try to do what my higher power wants me to do. And then things seem to fall into place. The plan seems to come together. And sometimes I don't see the reason until later on. But, I guess that's about all I got. Just happy to be here, happy to be clean and sober, and happy to be around all you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Again, I'm an addict named Pat. I'd like to thank Bob for sharing. And I'd like to introduce the second speaker. His name is Todd.
Manek, my name's Todd. I'd like to thank Bob for asking me to come speak and thank the retreat. When I first heard of this topic, it's a good topic for me, actually, because like when I first got clean, well, when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I wasn't thinking, like, what can I do? You know what I mean? I was thinking more of how can I use, you know, successfully. And, I came into the rooms behind a lot of consequences. You know, I had a lot of consequences every time I picked up. And, I tried to the best of my ability, I tried to, you know, in between coming to meetings, I'd gather up change, I'd wait for windows of opportunities, and I'd go out and use again. You know, I'd set up every meeting, you know what I mean? I'd go, I'd be at a meeting every day, you know, I'd set up and break down 60 days, 80 days, 30 days, you know what I mean? And I just kept on using. And it went on like that for about a year, you know. And I got to the point of desperation, you know. Like a guy told me, one of my friends told me that he looked at me right straight in the eye and he said, "You might be one of those that just don't get it, man. You know, you just might be like one of those that just aren't going to be able to stay clean, you know." And when he said that, like, I never thought that I wouldn't be able to get it. I thought I was choosing not to, you know. And when this guy said that, like, it struck a chord in me, you know. Because like every time I picked up, it was like a shit grenade going off. Every time I picked up, I didn't want, like, everybody to start crying. I didn't want all this bullshit that comes with when I pick up, you know. And I continually, any way I tried, you know what I mean, I came off with the same stuff, you know. And when he said that, that stayed with me. You know, that stayed with me. And I continued to relapse until, like, I had what was my last run. You know what I mean? I had a hard 7-day run, you know. And, I had a newborn kid and all the shit was going on. And I had a hard run, man. And it was one of those, you know, it was like your last run, you know. It was hard, man. It was, I had already been into rehab. I had to go back into treatment. It was humiliating. Because I was down at the spot. I had no money. I didn't take my shoes off. I didn't shower. You know, I didn't eat for those days. And, I had to call up my mother, you know what I mean, to come pick me up, you know. And, like when I peeled my, I went home, I started to come down a little bit. I came home and I didn't notice. Like I was, you know, when I started to come down, my feet hurt, you know. And I took off my shoes and I had to peel my socks off because they were cracked in blood for not taking my shoes off for that week, you know. And, I went back into treatment and, when I went into treatment this time, they wanted to give me, you know, they wanted to give me Librium and they wanted to give me all that. I said, fuck that. I don't want nothing. You know what I mean? I was going to come out clean. You know what I mean? And I had it. I freaking had it. And I came out and, I didn't know how to stay clean. I seriously, I was coming around for a while, but I really didn't know how I was going to stay clean, because you know what? I didn't think I could. Like, I had a fear that I wouldn't be able to get this. You know what I mean? And, I remember it well, man. I own a bar, right? And I was up there, and, every time the cash register would ring, I would feel, wherever I was in the building, I could feel it coming up through my legs. You know what I mean? It was the money. But I didn't see $20 bills, I didn't see $10. I saw bags. You know, I saw money, I saw a bag. You know, that was it. You know? And, I was there, and, I didn't know what to do. I remember, I don't know what, I just not knowing what to do, right? And I kept on going through my head. What do I do? So I had a basic text, and I picked it up, and I ain't kidding you, I opened it up, and it opened up to that chapter. You know, what can I do? And that was a spiritual awakening for me. That was, the first, wow of my recovery, because I could not believe it. Because I didn't even know there was it's in between the steps and your traditions. I didn't even know it was there, you know what I mean? And it's short, so I like it a lot. And, I opened it up, and it was right in front of me, and I started laughing, you know? And I read that, you know? And it talked about, you know, it talked about surrender, the first paragraph. It's like a compilation of all the steps, actually, like the whole thing. But every time throughout my recovery, when I'm in a jam, I'll read that. That's my favorite chapter in the basic text. You know what I mean? And a big part of my recovery, I like the way it talks about the steps. I like the way it talks about, you know, we have to continue in the step process. You know what I mean? And it talks about, like the second paragraph, it talks about this, talks about having a second step. And like all those times when I was, when I'd relapse, like I'd almost be there, you know what I mean? I knew, you know, when I used, things would happen. I knew that I couldn't control it, but I didn't know any other way, right? So without that, you know, I had that void it talks about. Like I had that void in my life, and I wasn't able to take that second step, you know what I mean? And when I started to do that, when I came in, I had a sponsor, I had a home group, and I started my program. I started to make the phone calls. Like, it's like, I share this a lot. Like, I compare that last run to, like, every time I'd use, I'd get hit with a hot rod, right? It would hurt, but it would heal and it would go away, man. That last run was like I got branded. Like, that rod was in the fire, and it was hot enough, and it was a long enough duration that it branded me. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I will never forget the degradation and the humiliation that I freaking felt on that last run. You know what I mean? I got my ass kicked. I was just saying that. It ain't nothing like a good ass kick. You know what I mean? And I will never forget that. You know? And with that pain comes immense willingness, man. I was willing to stay clean. I was willing to use my sponsor. I used the phone. You know what I mean? Like, there are things, there are positive things that, like, I started to look for those things, like Bob was talking about. I started to look for those positive things to do. Like, when I had a feeling, it talks about it in the chapter. We have to learn how to survive our feelings. Like, when I got clean, I didn't know what was going on, man. And that's all I knew was that I could call somebody and I could tell them about it. You know what I mean? And I was scared shit to use again. So I was willing to go to any lengths to stay clean, you know? And that's what they told me. They said call. So I started out calling when I knew people weren't home, right? And I'd talk to their answering machine. And I am not a humble person. I am an arrogant son of a bitch. And I don't want to ask you for help. I don't want to tell you I'm in pain. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to tell you I can't do this. Right? So I would call my sponsor's answering machine. I'd call people's answering machines. And I just got used to talking to that answering machine. And then when I'd see them in meetings, they would talk to me like I wouldn't even really know their face that well, you know? But they'd talk to me and they'd laugh because I'd tell them the specials and like I do, you know what I mean? I just talk to their answering machine. And then, like, I got to the point where I did have a decent support group, right? And, like, I still wouldn't share anything in a meeting, you know, really. And I would just tell, like, if I was going through something, you know what I mean? I got over that. I was able to break the ice, you know what I mean? And I got the support group, but like when I was going through something with a relationship or whatever, I would tell like my support group, right? And I had it in my head that if I told two or three of these guys anything, the freaking whole fellowship would know about it anyway. So I would tell these guys, you know, I'd tell them what was going on, and I would be like, I would almost know that, you know, by this time everybody else knew about it, then I could share this shit. And this is my process, you know? And, but that's how I started in, like, the process of sharing. I got a sponsor, and my sponsor taught me how to share in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. You know, he taught me whatever I'm going through, everybody's got their shit, you know what I mean? Everybody's got them. It doesn't, the details don't really matter. But what matters, he said, is getting that off and then sharing what you're doing about it. This is not a dumping ground. You know what I mean? It's that you dump your shit and you leave. He told me I have a responsibility to the newcomer to share the solution. You know what I mean? And like the solution, most of the time, is what I'm doing to get through something clean. You know what I mean? What I'm doing to stay clean for that day. You know? And the solution you... It's like so important for me, being like I'm me, right? It's so important for me to try not to blame. You know what I mean? I'm one, I was always one to not take responsibility. You know what I mean? To look at things negatively, like if shit didn't work out, I'd be the one, I'd be the one, you know, trying to point the finger, you know, at somebody else instead of saying, and this is like a big part of the people that are around me today, a big part of their recovery is this, that they leave that go and they're able to take a positive step and say, what can we do about this now? What can I do about this now? You know what I mean? That's done. Now, what can we do? Like I started in construction, I had to totally leave the restaurant in order to stay clean. I had to drop that. I got out of it completely, right? And I had to do something with myself, so I started in construction, right? And building stuff, we were framing for the longest time. We were framing. And, like, that taught me a lot. It taught me because, like, I would, you know, I had a partner and we ran the business. And then I split on my own. And, like, I found out real quick that, like, if you got a wall out of plumb, I don't want to get into the details, but if something's wrong, you just can't start, you know, you just can't blame somebody else. You gotta, it's amazing, like, what we can do, and we just, when the crew is on a positive, all right, this happened, let's just walk away, get back to it, and fix it. Let's just fix it. And this thing that I thought was going to be devastating to the house ends up being a 20-minute fix. And I don't know if anybody knows what I'm talking about, but, like, that is a lesson for me. Like, it's not as bad. Things aren't as bad as I perceive them to be. You know, understand what I'm saying? Like, I can, in the past, something that would be a 20-minute fix would wreck me for weeks. It would wreck me for the day. And I'm telling you what, the crew, like, the way I would talk to them, the way I communicated with them, was not healthy. You know what I mean? When I first got clean. But I found out by working and doing the work that we do that it was so much more positive. The way I reacted to things, the way I react to things, if I go one way, that's the way the crew's going to go. You know what I mean? It's going to be a rough day. But if I can just flip my perception, you know what I mean? Just try to take, like you were saying, you know, take a positive use of principle, right? I can turn the whole thing around. And I only learned that from building houses, you know? And, I think that's a real gift. You know, like, what I'm doing is a real gift, you know? And, like, I've been doing it for, you know, some years now. And, a lot of times I forget what a gift I've only been doing it for 5 years and I have a company, you know? And we do all right, you know? And a lot of days, I am not grateful. You know what I mean? I'm not grateful for what I have. You know? I didn't even think about that, you know? You know, in the chapter, like, it talks, it talks about establishing a relationship with a higher power, you know, and changing our attitudes and behaviors, you know. Like, my attitudes are the same, I think, but my behaviors have gotten better. You know what I mean? I'm not the most, like, the way I talk to people, the way I, you know, think and act, I think, or the way I think and act. You know what I'm saying? They have gotten better, but, like, my behaviors, what I do, you know what I mean, with my attitudes are a lot different. You know what I'm saying? I'm not the person that came in here. I'm not the person that I was when I was a year clean, you know? And I think that's important. Like, I had a guy tell me that, like, he talks about just the way we were, the way I was when I was using. I do have recovery in my life today. You know, no matter what happens at area service or at the freaking pig roast, you know what I mean? That's recovery, because, like, when I think back, I would be flipping tables. I would be freaking flipping tables, you know? And, like, I'm not doing those things. I'm not acting on my first thought these days, you know what I mean? I'll say it, you know what I mean? And that's recovery for me, you know what I mean? It'll come out my mouth, because it's got to come out somewhere. You know what I mean? And, like, I have a sponsor that has love for me, and is he's very patient. You know what I mean? He's patient because I continue to do the same things over and over again, and he continues to tell me the same thing, you know? And, like, today, you know, the gifts that I have, you know, from staying clean, man, are when I'm looking at them, right? When I'm acknowledging them, are it's better than, like, my life is better than I ever thought it could be. You know what I mean? When I go to bed at night, I fall out. I fall asleep, man. I was never able to sleep because of all from. When I could remember, I was never able to lay my head down and fall asleep because of all the shit in between my head, thinking about what to do, what am I supposed to, you know, thinking about this, thinking about that. I could never have the peace that I have today. And believe me, like, I, you know what I mean, I'm an insane. I'm criminally insane. I'm a sociopath, and that's okay. You know, because those things are getting better, you know, if I give myself a chance. Like, I have a choice today, you know what I mean? I have a choice to choose recovery, you know? But if I pick up, there ain't nothing, you know, all bets are off. They say in my area, all bets are off if I choose to use, you know? Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thanks, Todd. We got like 5 minutes left. Anybody have anything they want to share? Anyone? Don't be shy. Anybody, come on. You guys don't want me to share. We got like 5 minutes, so I'm going to just speak for a minute. I'm an addict named Pat. And, when they told me this topic, it's funny because, like, I hadn't read this part of the book for, like, since I first got clean. And like, you know, like most people that just got clean, I didn't remember anything I've read anyway. And I was at a meeting the other night, and I came late. And that was the, they read from that chapter, and then they were sharing. And the kid gave me the book, and I'm trying to, like, read and listen at the same time, which is kind of hard. But, I just remember one part that said, self-obsession is the core of this disease, you know, and so, like, when I think about what I can do, You know, sometimes it's just real simple, like, you know, first it starts with, like, not picking up. You know, and, you know, I've been really lacking in, like, reaching out to people that are just coming in the door, you know, because I can remember that feeling of being scared and, you know, not knowing what to expect. So, you know, it's like, you know, God just works in my life today, you know, and I go to that chapter, and then that's the topic of this meeting, and it's like, you know, that to me, that's just telling me that that's what I need to do, because that's what I remember, is that self-obsession, and that I always think it's about me, and that, you know, sometimes it's real simple, it's just like helping somebody else, you know, and, you know, that it's like been on my mind, like, I've been listening, but at the same time, I'm like just thinking, that, like, you know, that I need to step up to the plate and try to help another person. You know, someone coming into the door that, you know, because I don't reach out to people. You know what I mean? You could come in and you know, I could see it in your face, and it's hard for me to stand up and say, I'm an addict named Pat, welcome. You know, just like somebody did it for me. And you know, that's what I really need to do. And, you know, I had to share that because sometimes, you know I need to do something, I got to go to meetings and share about it for a week or two before I get the willingness to actually do it. You know, I can make that decision a million times, but, like, I have to get that willingness to put it into action. So, you know, that's all I got to share. And, like, we got a couple minutes if anyone got anything else. Anybody? Come on. Anyone? All right. I'd like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. And could we please have the reading of just for today from the podium?